and the glucose is the following. So the first thing is Vayidav Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe in Har Sinai Lemor, and then it goes into Shemitah. So the famous Rashi says Ma Inyan Shemitah Itzol Har Sinai. Why is Shemitah written regarding Har Sinai? Like all mitzvahs in Har Sinai, all the mitzvahs were said in Har Sinai. It's not like it was only Shemitah. Just like Shemitah had all of its general rules and the specific rules, as well as all the dikdukim written on Har Sinai, it was all written on Har Sinai. Well, we don't find it repeated, so we see that since it wasn't repeated later on, it must have been it was all in Har Sinai, so too everything else was written on Har Sinai. Okay, there's still issues. Why specifically Shemitah? Was Shemitah the only one that wasn't mentioned later on? And maybe it is. Maybe it's the only mitzvah that's not repeated in Arvos Moav. But it seems like there might have been other mitzvahs around there that weren't repeated. For example, making the big day kuna doesn't say those mitzvahs by Arvos Moav. So why not choose those? Why not say Har Sinai right by the big day kuna or something like that? So here we go. If you're a kofer, I'm not saying you are, but if you were, then you would ask me how we know that Torah was Min HaShemayim. How do you know it's Min HaShemayim? Maybe it was, you know, maybe it was just Moshe Rabbeinu got around and decided, you know what, I'm going to write my own Torah.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Just the other day. That's horrible. But 100%. So what's a famous answer? Famous answer that people say is, your own book wouldn't end with your death. That's not a good ending. If you're going to write about yourself, you're going to write like, and I got everything I wanted. But you didn't. He died at the end, and he didn't get into Eretz Yisrael. Like, everything he wanted to do, he didn't get. So you wouldn't end a book that way. Plus, you wouldn't write your own mistakes. If you made a mistake, you would never say it. Moshe Rabbeinu is all about writing his own mistakes. I messed up by May Mariva. These people did this. These people did that. So one thing after the other is mistake after mistake after mistake that's done by the Avos, done by the Shvatim, done by everybody. People make mistakes. It's just, you see that there's got to be something a little wrong. That it must be that it's Min HaShemayim and not from Moshe Rabbeinu himself. But here's another one. Certain mitzvos can prove to you that these are Min HaShemayim. There's no way that a person would come up with these mitzvos. You want to know an example of such a mitzvah? Shemitah. Okay, I understand, according to the Rambam, that the purpose of Shemitah was to make your field more healthy. That the reason why was because you planted it year after year after year after year, and after a while, your field gets weakened. Because the ground, the nutrients underneath don't get a break. So you need to leave it open for a year. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says is, leave it open for a year, and then everything will be okay. But don't do it everybody at once. Why would everyone do that at once? Can you imagine just President Obama saying, everybody take a year off of your business. Just everybody, just nobody go to work. Nobody go to work. For 1 year, everything will be okay. Just trust me. It's just like, it makes no sense. No, don't travel the world. He wouldn't want that, because then you'll go work outside of the U.S. Yeah. What he doesn't want is that. It doesn't make any sense. It wouldn't make any sense for a leader to get up and tell his people, nobody work. You're going to cause a hunger. It's like the worst idea you could possibly imagine. Worst idea you could possibly think of is, well, let's not let anybody work this year. Let's get everyone together. Who would do that? Only a God would do that. Only a God would get up and he would say something. It's got to be a Min HaShemayim. Because no human being would make such... I'm putting this in my little paraphrase fingers over here. Stupid mitzvah. Just strange mitzvah. Unless you could guarantee that they're going to have food. You can get... Could Moshe Rabbeinu guarantee? No. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu could. So it must be a Min HaShemayim. Rabbi David Kaplan spoke at Skokie the other day and he said... That he said there was a Baal Tshuva that he met in Rosh Meach. He asked him, how do you become a Baal Tshuva? He said he was looking through a Shabbos book in English, and he read about the halachas of Borer. And he was looking through the halachas of Borer, and he said, I was really inspired by the halachas of Borer, and I decided I'm going to become a Baal Tshuva. He said, Rabbi Kaplan looked at him and said, the halachas of Borer? You know, I can't separate a little piece of meat from something else. All of a sudden, he became frum. Why would a person become frum off the halachas of Borer? So listen to what the Baal Tshuva said. Unbelievable answer. He said to him, no sane human being would come up with these halachas. Who cares if you would separate beans from barley? Or you would separate one thing from the other? It makes no sense. Who would make something up? Only a God could care about this. Only somebody who's above this world could care about this. There's no way that a normal human being would have written that. That's the Pshat Yain Shemitah. The Shemitah could not have been written by a normal human being. And Hathrian says Reb Schwab, therefore, Shemitah is Itzel Har Sinai. Shemitah proves that all the Torah is from Har Sinai. Because the concept of such a mitzvah is so far removed from anybody's intellect, nobody would come up with such a mitzvah. It must be that all the mitzvahs were set in Har Sinai. If this mitzvah was given in Har Sinai, all the mitzvahs were set in Har Sinai. That's Reb Schwab's answer. I thought that was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable answer. So next time you meet a kofer, that's what you tell him. I don't know the Torah from Har Sinai. Look at Shemitah. Fool. Alright, and then you go on. That's that. How's the Bukhul Kosai? I know I'm skipping a little bit in Bahar. I'm going to try to get back a little bit to Bahar, but I'm going to really skip around a little bit. Parsha Bukhul Kosai is a very interesting parsha. I'd say most of Bahar is Shemitah. There's a little bit at the very end about if a person becomes poor, what do you do when the house is and everything like that. Welcome, guys. But very, very big things. But Parsha Bukhul Kosai immediately goes into rewards that we get. The rewards that you get if you keep the mitzvos. I'm going to ask you something. You know the concept Schar Mitzvos Bahai Alma Lekha? There's no such thing as reward for mitzvos in this world. You can't get rewarded for mitzvos in this world. Doesn't happen. No such thing. There's no such thing as a person going along and saying, you know what, I just did, let's just say, I just davened, therefore I found $20 in the street. Doesn't happen. All the reward that you get comes in Shemayim. When you go to Shemayim, you're going to sit there, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to pull out the whole wallet full of stuff, and you're going to be like, this is all for your mitzvos. But down here, you're not getting anything at all. Okay. That also proves to our Midrash mind, by the way. Parentheses? Ready for a little parentheses on this? If a false god or a false prophet came along, and he would say, do this, and I'll give you, he can't promise anything in this world, because he has no ability. So what's he going to promise you? The next world. So a Christian missionary, or an Islamic jihad leader, I don't know what they're called, what are they called? Sheiks. What are they called? Mufti, that's right. M-U-F-T-I, I forgot about that. That's right. Or what? Imams, that's right. All these different names. What would they promise you? They would look at you and they would say, you know what? Go kill yourself for the cause, and I promise you everything you want in Olam Haba. We're not going to go into what they promised them. Pure Yashmias. But I'm going to promise you anything you want in Olam Haba. A Christian missionary will say to them, I can't promise you anything in this world. I can promise you the next world. But God, not only does He not do that, our God doesn't even mention Olam Haba. Doesn't even mention what happens after you die. Not once in the entire Tanakh. There's not one mention anywhere in all of Tanakh of life after death. Nowhere. If you look us up in Encyclopedia Britannica, we don't believe in life after death. I don't know if you knew that. Jews. You can look up death, and under Jews, Jews don't believe in life after death. We don't believe it. So I had no idea. I was surprised that he knew more than I did. But it makes sense that the way they would think of it, because a real God could only promise you things here. A fake God will have to promise you things that you would never see. You won't know about it. How do I know I'm going to get it? Just trust me. Trust me, you'll get it. I promise you, you'll get it. But a real God can say to you, do it and I'll promise you, you'll get rewarded immediately afterward. But I thought Schar Mitzvah Hayom Malacha. You don't get the reward from mitzvahs in this world. How does that happen exactly? Okay. It's all in order for you to do more mitzvahs. In other words, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu rewards you, it's that you have tzedakah, so that you can give more, so that you have extra money to be able to give more tzedakah. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu will promise you that this will end up happening at that. I had a whole board years ago in Parshas B'chul Kosai about how I wished that I could do a mitzvah. And I said, in B'chul Kosai Teilecho means, if you want to do my mitzvahs, I promise you I'll give you the ability to do my mitzvahs. And I said, I just heard about somebody doing the mitzvah of Shiluah HaKein, of sending away the mother bird. And I said, in this year, I set it out, and I said, I wish that I could do that mitzvah. And if a person wishes hard enough, you're going to get it. Sure enough, that week, I was in Eretz Yisrael, so anything can happen in Eretz Yisrael. That week, a bird came to my windowsill, laid an egg on my windowsill, meaning my apartment in Eretz Yisrael. And yeah, it was a whole big, because I had to be mafkir my thing and everything. It was a whole, the bird came, laid an egg, and I was able to do Shiluah HaKein. And the next week, I brought in the egg. I said, I told you! I brought in the actual egg. And then the next day, I went to Nash Arm to go put it in like a glass box. I put it up there, and it fell in the street. Cracked. It was horrible. Oh, that would be awesome. That would be even better. Like, put it inside a glass box, you know, like, seal it around and, like, make it into, like, a little thing. You know what I'm talking about? Like, what they do with the, you know what they do for the
glasses.
Yeah, the glass that you break, on, you know, under it? What? I wanted to, but it broke.
22.
Yeah. No, come on. I would let it run. What do I care? All right, then that was that. Regardless, it would have worked out well. Don't worry about it. It would have been unbelievable. You would have looked at it and been like, oh, that's a preserved egg. You would have been fine with it. But either way, it didn't work out for the best way. But that's the idea of the glucose. Let's go into a Shemi Shmuel. This Shemi Shmuel, unbelievable. You don't get much better than the Shemi Shmuel. So sometimes you look at, you know, certain machlokasim and you say, like, oh, this has nothing to do with me. For example, Bishilu Beishamai argue, what was created first? Eretz or Shamayim? Now, it seems very clear from the Torah, Bereishis Bara Lokim, that's a Shamayim, that's Eretz. So it sounds like what was created first? The Shamayim and the Eretz was created. But the problem is, Eila told us Eretz, the Shamayim Bihi Barom. Later on, the Pasuk seems to say that that Eretz was made before Shamayim. So what's going on here? So Beisavol takes one literally. He says that Eretz was created first. The Shamayim says, no, Shamayim was created first. I have no idea if that had anything to do with his name. But he ended up saying that it was Shamayim. Shamayim ended up being first. Seemingly, nothing. Absolutely no ramifications. Nothing to do with us. You can't get anything out of it. The fact is, your body is an olam kaza. It stands for its own little world. Your body is its own world. You have two parts of that body that makes decisions. Your lathe, your heart, and your moach, your brain. The lathe and the moach. They do different things, though. The lathe is emotional. As you can understand, women have a bigger heart than they do their brain. I know this is going to sound extremely anti-woman. That's okay. You've heard me before. It's perfectly fine. But they're more emotional than they are intellectual. There are, of course, there are certain people that are not that way. They're manly women. That's fine. You can have that once in a while. But they're more emotional. They're more in touch with their emotions than they are with their intellect. And they deal more with their emotions than they do anything else. While a man will deal more with his intellect than he will with his emotions. A guy will argue for the sake of arguing, while a woman will only get emotionally involved. She'll be the one to cry quicker than the guy, unless the Lion King is on TV and Mufasa dies. That's the only way that it's possible for the guy to cry first. But other than that, it's not going to happen. He's killed. Yeah, well, he does die. Either way, regardless, once that happens, your moach, your brain, is standing there saying, I want to understand everything. I want to know what God is doing. I want to understand why God does this. It's the one that asks the questions. Why is this? Why is that? And it tries to understand. It tries to figure it out. I don't understand. Why is this? Why is that? Everything else. Your heart understands that sometimes it's better to just keep quiet. To knock yourself down and just be like, no, if we don't understand, we don't understand. To be an un-of, so to speak. To be more humble and to knock yourself down. Now, that's good because you want to show that you're nothing in comparison to him. The machlokes b'shama b'seo is exactly this. The Shammai says that Shamayim was created first, which means your intellect, which is the Shamayim up in the skies, all the way in the heavens, trying to think of what God is doing, and obviously the one higher than the heart, your intellect is a very important part to your spiritual growth. Your heart, your emotions, and how you act toward God and how you act toward other fellow humans is also important. But what's greater? Which is more important? What do you concentrate on first? Says Beis Shammai, the first thing you do is Shamayim and then Eretz. Concentrate on your intellect first. Figure out who God is and what God is and what He does. And then afterward, start using your emotions to understand how you are, who you are in comparison to God. But Beis Shammai says no. Beis Shammai says no. First you work on your heart. First you work on your emotions. You try to knock yourself down a little bit. Know that you're nothing and then make yourself a little bit smarter. And try to understand who God is and what He's doing and then start working on your intellect. And thus the Eretz is first. The Pshat is Beis Shammai says if you start off with humility, knocking yourself down, using your emotions, then it could be you're going to knock yourself down so much you'll never come to even think to yourself that I'll ever be able to understand God. So you won't even bother trying. So like, I can't do it anyway. You'll just give up, and you won't do anything at all. While Beis Shammai says, no, just the opposite. We're not worried that that's going to... Beis Shammai says, just the opposite. We're worried that if you only work with the Shamayim, you're going to have a tremendous amount of gaiva. And you're going to start thinking to yourself, I'm great, I'm tremendous, I can do everything. And then you'll forget that there's a God in this world. So first work in your heart, then work in your brain. But the machlokas between them has to do with you yourself, what you're supposed to do. Toward the end of B'chu Kosai, everybody knows this pasuk. Normally, when it goes through the Avos, who's first? Avram, right? Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. That's normally how you go through it. And benching, that's how we do offering. It's like Yaakov Bakomi Koko. And it's clear that that's the way. When it goes through the curses, and it says what's going to happen to everybody, strange pasuk. V'zacharti, where is it? V'zacharti is Brisi Yaakov. V'af is Brisi Yitzchak. V'af is Brisi Avraham is Kor, or it's Eskor. It's in the opposite order. Why does it go from Yaakov to Yitzchak to Avraham? Shouldn't it be Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov? Happens to be the only time in the Torah it does so. Happens to be it's the only time where Yaakov Yitzchak Avraham is in that order. Otherwise, it's Avraham Yitzchak Avraham, or at least Avraham is before Yaakov. So what's going on that it goes in the opposite order of Yaakov Yitzchak Avraham? So here's the shot. What did Avraham stand for? What midah did he have above all else? Chesed, right? That meant that he used his heart. He went with his emotions. And he fell with his emotions. He was like Beis Hillel. And he went with his emotions. Now, Avada, he understood that there was a God in this world. But what did he concentrate on? He concentrated on his lave. He concentrated on the emotion more than the intellect. And he cared more about what people would think or what people would do than he cared about. And it's clearly, when the Orchim came, when the Malchim came to his house, what did he do? He turned away from his conversation with God. And he went to the Orchim. Now, your brain would tell you, what are you, crazy? You're going to turn away from God to go to a bunch of... Then let the guests go! What difference does that make? You're busy. That's what your brain would tell you, but your heart tells you, no. You got to go to the guests first. Maybe they need something. That's what your heart would tell you. That's what Avraham stands for. Avraham Avinu stands for the heart above the brain. Well, Yaakov Avinu stands for shleimus. Intellectual perfection, says the Shein Yishmol. Where he was absolutely perfect. Where he worked more with his moach than he did with his heart. He does not give an example. I could speculate and say why this is so, why this isn't so. I'm not going to speculate, though. The Shein Yishmol didn't say it. I don't want to say exactly what I would say in this sort of a thing. I'm not positive. But the fact is, he says that Yaakov was that way. Now, who should come first? According to Beis Hillel, we possibly like Beis Hillel and not Beis Shammai. So what comes first? The heart, then the brain. First work on the heart, first work on your emotions, and then start doing your intellectual business. So who should come first? Avraham Avinu. So throughout the entire Torah, Avraham Avinu is first, then Yitzchak, then Yaakov. That's the normal thing throughout the whole Torah. But why does it mention this pasuk? It's at the end of the curses. The curses where we're thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, we're in exile, and we're already knocked down, we're thrown down. Well, we need a heart? We have to make ourselves a nuvim? We need to make ourselves humble? That's not what we have to do. We're already humble. We're down to the ground. The non-Jews are walking all over us. We're being destroyed by them. We don't need a heart right now. Now we need a brain. We have to understand that there still is a God. Even though it doesn't look like it, there still is a God. So first you got to think, is there a God? Yes, there is. Why is there one? You have to think about it first, and then you work in your emotions. So in Golus, it's the opposite. Normally, Avraham Avinu is right, and Avraham comes before Yaakov. But in the times of Golus, who comes first? Yaakov comes before Avraham Avinu. And that's why when it says it over here, Vizacharti is basically Yaakov, it's Yaakov that comes first. And then comes Avraham Avinu. Because even though normally it'll be like Beis Hillel, in this case, Beis Shammai has to be correct. We're afraid of knocking a guy down too far. And if he goes down too far, he's never going to bring himself back. He's always going to say to himself, there's no God. There's no God. Well, yeah, there's no God. Because the emotions are telling us, your emotions are screaming out loud, help us, help us. And it seems like nobody's answering. You need to, intellectually, maybe there's a reason why God isn't answering. That's what you got to start thinking. That's the idea behind it. Oh, that's such a crazy little board. Now I'm going to take this. Let's take it a lot further. Yaakov, in this pasuk, is spelled with a vav. Yud, ayin, kuf, vav, vav. Extra vav inside there. Only twice in the Chumash does it spell it that way. Five times in all of Tanakh. Normally, Yaakov is spelled Yud, ayin, kuf, vav. And throughout the entire Bereishis, Yaakov is Yud, ayin, kuf, vav. What's with the vav? Does anybody have that answer? Anybody know what happened? What? From Yaakov, from Eliyahu. That's what he said, right? I couldn't tell. I'm sorry. Too far away. But Eliyahu Anavi, 100%. Eliyahu Anavi always has a vav. Except for... No way. Five times. Where he's spelled without the vav. Aleph, Lamed, Yud, Hey. What's pshat? So Chazal say an unbelievable medrash. Yaakov Avinu took away the vav from Eliyahu Hanavi. He said, give me that vav. And he made Eliyahu Hanavi promise to bring the Geula b'mher of Yameinu, and then he'll give him back the vav. But until then, you're not getting that vav back. What does that mean? Like there's a fight in Shemayim between their names? Like, you know, like Yaakov Avinu's like grabbing the ball, and Eliyahu's like, no, give it back to me. Yaakov's like, no, promise me. That, oh, come on. What does that mean? What does the vows have to do with anything? What is that referring to? So here's a very, very good shot. So this is also from a Schwab. The previous one was a Shemi Shmuel, but this is Reb Schwab. You know, what was a greater miracle? Sari Aminu giving birth or Yocheved giving birth to Moshe Rabbeinu? How old was Sari Aminu when she gave birth? 90 years old. How old was Yocheved? Trick question. Question: how old she was? She might have been 123, maybe been 127, maybe 133. A little bit of a question. Some say 137, but either way, Yocheved was much older than Sarah by almost 40 years. Why don't we mention that miracle in the Torah? Wouldn't that be a clear miracle that you should put in there? Yocheved gave birth over the age of 130. That'd be a very nice thing to put in. If I would have them in the Torah, I would be like, especially if you have Sara Yemenu in there, and the Torah goes on about Sara Yemenu, it was the biggest miracle, it was unbelievable, everything about Sara Yemenu, but Yochanan also had the same miracle happen to her. What about her? Rivka Yemenu, was barren for 20 years. There's barely a mention in the Pasuk. Barely a mention. Like, and eventually she gave birth. And she had two twins, and it goes on for a long time. But the fact that Rivka Yemenu was a barren woman, and she was able to give birth, not a word. Rachel Yemenu, she couldn't give birth. Some say she didn't have a womb. She's just as bad as Sarah Yemenu. So what's going on? Why not mention her? Yocheved, we know. Chana with Shmuel. Doesn't go into the miracle. Just says she gave birth. She gave birth. So what's going on? What's the shot over here that all of a sudden we're going into Sarah Yemenu over anybody else? So the Ramban answers. The Ramban says, the only miracles that we have written down in the Torah, the only miracles that we have, are those miracles that they prophesied about beforehand. If there was a Navi or a Malach that came along and said, this is what's going to happen, and then it happens, then we write it down in the Chumash. That's when we write it down in the Chumash. But if there's no prophecy about it beforehand, then it's not mentioned in the Torah. What's the greatest miracle that Avraham Avinu was able to have happen to him? Greatest miracle. Before talking to Hashem. He didn't even talk to Hashem yet. The greatest miracle that Avraham Avinu had happen to him. Get thrown into the fire. Or cast him. Is there even a word of that in the Chumash? Now, one word. The greatest miracle that ever happened to Avraham Avinu, he had not spoken to God yet. He had never spoken to God. He had no idea if he was right. And yet he was thrown into a fire, survived, convinced hundreds of thousands of people. The Medrash says 900,000 people were there, and they all called out, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. That'd be a nice thing to put in the Torah, no? That'd be a great thing to put in there. Why wouldn't you put that in there? Says the Ramban, because nobody prophesied about it beforehand. It's just a miracle. Just a miracle. And in theory, that type of a miracle could be explained away. In theory, you could say, oh, well, he had asbestos all over him. He clearly had asbestos all over him. I mean, there's no question about that. If a guy comes up and he says, Avraham Avinu is going to be thrown into the fire, and he's going to survive, and everybody looks at him, you know they're going to wash him, and they're going to make sure, like, he's got nothing on him, then they throw him in, and if he survives, the guy's prophecy was correct, that's a huge miracle. That's a nice nigla. Everybody looks at him and says, wow, what a miracle. It's the greatest miracle I've ever seen. But if there was no prophecy about it, then you could just explain it away. Oh, you mean there were 100 Egyptian tanks and one Israeli tank? Yeah, that could happen. It could happen. There's no prophecy. But if the Chazon Ish would have gotten up beforehand and said, I just learned, and because of my learning today, I'm telling you there's going to be 100 Egyptian tanks versus one Israeli tank, and the 100 Egyptian tanks are going to kill each other, and the one Israeli tank is going to survive, and that's what happens, and you go, Nis Nigla! Because then everybody sees what happens. Then you see it. You'll see it in actuality. You're going to see it right there in front of you. How many times did they cross the river, pick themselves up for them? Kriyas Yamsuf? Happened once, right? What about the Kriyas Yardin when they went inside Eretz Yisrael?
Happened three separate times.
Three separate times it happened, actually. Kriyas Yamsuf happened, number one. And then we make a whole big deal out of it. It's got a parsha, and there's a huge song, and we sing it every day, and everything good. And then Yoshua takes the people up to the Yardin River, and it stands up in the air, and they crossed over, and they went inside Eretz Yisrael. Yay! There's nothing. Nothing! Absolutely nothing. What is something crazier? Rapikos ben Yair had the same miracle happen to him. He comes up to a river, he has an Arab guy and somebody else that's with him, and he goes up to the river and he says, river, stop your waters, I want to cross. The river says, no, I'm on my way. Rapikos ben Yair says, do it. And then the river's like, fine. And it splits. Rapikos ben Yair is like, alright, goes right across. What's the big miracle? If Rapikos ben Yair can do it, 1,000 years later, probably more like 2,000 years later, 2,200 years later. Well, what's the big deal that Chris Yamsu? It happened three times. What's the big deal? They say that Alexander the Great had it happen to him. They bring it down in Josephus, and it's also brought down in the Tacitus, who's one of the Roman philosophers. They all say Alexander the Great had the exact same thing happen to him. He was going up to a river, and the river split for him. What? Oh, and of course, because what's shot? Because they look at it and say, that's explainable. Yeah, there was a wind. There was a wind. But if you prophesize it beforehand, if Moshe Rabbeinu looks at them and says, watch what God is going to do for you. You are going to escape the Egyptians. And then the sea splits. Whoa. That's already a miracle. What?
Makos.
The Makos also, each time, Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro, and he said, this is what's going to happen.
Then they were able to do it, so it didn't make any impact.
It had an impact on the Egyptians. The problem was either the hardening of the heart or Paro was a jerk. It's one of the two. But they thought they had an impact. Everybody's sitting there saying, this is absolutely crazy. There's no one that was denying Moshe Rabbeinu's ability. And remember, some say the Bechoros stood up against their fathers when they heard about Makos Bechoros. So, this guy's been right like 7,000 times now. Why are we doing this? We're all going to die. And Paro's like, take it like a man. So he started a huge war. I mean, it's not, they did take it. It's just that Paro was a jerk. Or there was hardening of the heart that was happening over here. So what's shot? So here's the pshat. Eliyahu HaNavi went up to Har HaKarmel, went up to a certain mountain, and invited all of Bnei Yisrael to come. And he said to Bnei Yisrael, I'm going to fight those prophets of the Baal, which was a certain Avodah Zarah that they had. I'm going to fight up against those Nevi Baal. My korban is going to be answered, theirs will not. And Eliyahu HaNavi goes up on top of the mountain. Everybody is watching from down below. And he says to Hashem, Aneni Hashem Aneni. Answer me, God, answer me. Answer me that my korban is accepted. And answer me that they don't think it's kishuv. Why did Eliyahu HaNavi do that? Because he wanted to make a pure impression of a nes, nigla, that everybody would know, oh, this must be it. Everybody would know it's true, and that's what happened. And Nevi'ah Baal tried bringing it. It didn't work. And Eliyahu HaNavi looks at them, and he's like, shit, you got a bunch of idiots. And he made fun of them. He made fun of them in the Navi. And Eliyahu HaNavi's thing was answered. His prayer was answered. Yaakov Avinu goes up to Eliyahu HaNavi and says, you know, La'asid Lavo, Mashiach's going to come. There's going to be unreal miracles. Don't let them be explained away through nature. I want them to be miracles that everybody will stand up and say, this is a miracle. How do you do that? You have to predict it beforehand. Who predicts before Mashiach comes? Eliyahu HaNavi walks in and he's Mevaser, Mashiach is coming. Before everything happens, Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come and say, Mashiach is coming. There's going to be unreal miracles. Wait for them. And that way, when we see those miracles happen, it's not just another earthquake, not just another tsunami, not just another hurricane, not just another storm. What is it? It's a massive nes nigla. So Yaakov Avinu looks at Eliyahu HaNavi and says, it's you. You're the one who can do this. You're the one who did it before in Har HaKarmel. You made the miracle happen through your prophecy. Do it now when Bnei Yisrael need you right before the Gula. Let everyone see it and say, oh, this is a miracle. That's what I want you to do. And Eliyahu HaNavi said, I agree. I'll be the Mevaser. And at that moment, he became the person who is going to wait until everything comes along. And in order to get his Vav back, in order to get his full name back, to have the full name of Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the name that God does in order to create miracles, in order to get that Vav back and bring it into his name, he has to come along. And then he becomes El Yud Hei Vav, which are the three letters that are used for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And El, obviously, we all know, and that's the pshat behind it. Mariel says, you know, it's much easier now. You know why? Because the first time a guy tries to make something happen, it's much harder. Think of it like this. There is a wall that the Satan makes in which he does not allow miracles to happen. He doesn't want a miracle to happen, because what happens when miracles happen? People get impressed by it. So what ends up happening from that? People become firmer. People say, oh wow, there is a God. So Satan does not want all these miracles to happen. So what does he do? He takes from Shemayim to the land, he puts up a machitza. A huge iron wall. And he doesn't allow any miracles to go through. You want the sea to be split? Oh no, I'm not letting that happen. Oh, you want barren woman to give birth? Oh, I'm not letting that happen. And he puts up a huge iron wall. But Tzadikim's tefillos can break through that wall and make everything come through. So meaning, if Avraham Avinu davened, I don't want this woman to be barren anymore, I want this woman to give birth. Do you know what he does? What his tefillah does is it breaks through that wall. till the point comes where there's a hole in the wall. And that barren woman all of a sudden gives birth. Now the Satan may patch it up. And he may patch it up and put something there, but it's just a patch. So it's a lot easier to break through it again. It's a lot easier to be able to get another barren woman to give birth. So after Avraham had already davened for Sarah to give birth, it was so much easier for Rivka to give birth. And then for Rachel to give birth. And then for Hannah. And then for Yocheved. For them to give birth, it was much easier. But to break through the first time took Avraham Avinu's tefillos, one at the other after the other. It took a ton to be able to break through the wall. But once it was broken, it was broken. So there was Kriyas Yamsuf. The first time it happened was huge. Absolutely huge. There was no way to break through the wall. They couldn't get through it. Finally, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillos broke through it. And then afterward, oh, you want to split the sea? All right, that's easy. All you got to do is break through that little thing. That's how a tzaddik, a chassid, a chassidish yid, if you go to a certain rebbe, if the rebbe's already been answered regarding that inyan, it's a lot easier for it to happen again. It'll happen once again all over the place. You gotta go to the person who's had it happen to him before. Here's the coin. This is where it goes in. This is where it gets a little crazy. This is a real thing. Have you ever heard of the famous story of the Brisker Rav? The Brisker Rav was once sitting, and this is just, it's just an unbelievable story. The Brisker Rav was once sitting in his room, and he was trying to think. He thought of a certain question in Shas. He's going through the Gemara, and he thought of Akasha, and couldn't answer it. And he sat there, and he's thinking, and Mamish could not answer it. 3 days. 3 days he's sitting there, thinking. He couldn't answer the question. He's sitting there, oh, what in the world is going on? Couldn't figure it out. Finally, after 3 days, oh, I got it. He figured it out. He got the answer. It was such an unbelievable answer. So he went outside and he decided, oh, this is the best question answer I've had in a long, long time. Best question answer. I've never heard a question like this before. I've never had an answer like this. He was so unbelievable. Walks outside, and he passes by a certain house. In the house, a father and son are learning. They happen to be learning the exact same Gemara. The exact same Gemara that the Brisker Rav had a kasha on. Brisker Rav says, oh, let's see how they learn it. He stands outside the house. He hears the son, his little kid, ask his question. He asks his question. He's like, wow, that kid is a genius. Unbelievable, how did he get this question? Then the father slaps the kid in the face. He says, you call that Akasha? Here's the answer. And he gave the Brisker Rav's answer. Give the Brisker Rav's answer. Brisker Rav is sitting there. Did I lose my touch? What in the world is this? I asked a question that took me 3 days to answer, and this guy answers it just off the bat and slaps his kid for such a dumb question. What in the world is this? He was told in a dream. Shot is that when a person goes and tries to figure out Torah Mina Shamayim, there's a wall that's up there. You gotta break through that wall. But once you break through that wall, the Torah comes down and it spreads out to everybody. And anybody can get it. So before the Brisker Rav was able to break through that wall, the kid never would have even been able to be musug that question, and the father never would have been able to understand such an answer. But once he broke through the wall, the Torah got spread out to everybody. The exact same thing, there's a story of the Baba Sali and his father, Rabbeinu Masud. Rabbeinu Masud once tried to think of Akasha. He went in Kabbalah. It was in Kabbalah. This is obviously, we're talking Sephardi story and Ashkenazi story. But Sephardi story, he ended up having this whole thing in Kabbalah and he couldn't figure it out. He went into his room. For 2 days he was inside there, couldn't come out. Finally he got out and he said, oh, I got the answer. He comes out and he makes a Suda for everybody. I found the answer to the Akasha. Baba Sali said, say the Akasha. Tell me what the Akasha is. Don't tell me the answer. So he told him to the Baba Sali. The Baba Sali thought about it. Went to a room. 3 hours later, he comes out and he gives him the answer. So the father said, wait, it takes you 3 hours to come up with this? How in the world did you do that? Baba Sali said, you already broke through. Once you broke through, the Torah went to anybody. It just took me a little bit longer for me to figure it out. Also, the difference between a Sephardi story and an Ashkenazi story. Ashkenazi story went to a little kid. Sephardi story went to, still had to go to a gadol. Still had to go to a gadol in Torah. Couldn't go to just stomp a person. That's a crazy line. It's the exact same thing by miracles. And that's why the Pasuk says, when it goes through all the different things and all the good things that happen, it says, V'naflu eidechem lifneichem b'chorev. Where is it? V'naflu eidechem lifneichem l'chorev. They will fall in front of you by the sword. What does it mean by the sword? Says the Ma'aril. Beautiful answer. The sword is that when any tzaddik davens that their enemies should die, that tefillah doesn't only work for that tzaddik at the time. It becomes a cheref for all future enemies of anybody who's a child of that tzaddik. So when David HaMelech davens that he should go ahead and destroy his enemies, that tefillah is there for you to be able to use against your enemies. Then when you're trying to fight your enemies, you'll be able to use the exact same sword. You have two people that were in the army already. So you have two people that already fought against enemies. Using that cherev pipios, a double-edged sword, because it works not only for the person who does it, but later on, is the idea of using your tzinkus, using your ancestors to be able to fight the war for you. So you don't have to do it. It's not you. It's everybody else. And it becomes a huge nefilah and easier to do because they did it already. We're going to end up with one thing. I'm going to end up with this. It is a famous... I say this, I think, every year, but you have to. You can't go through Parshat Bechukosah without saying this word. We know how Rabbi Kiva was able to do what he did. Rabbi Kiva was one of the Asar Rugei Malchus. One of the 10 people who were killed because of the Shmatim's Chet, and that they sold Yosef. And we know what happened with the whole emperor. The emperor called them into the room, filled up the room with shoes, because the Shvatim bought shoes with the money. And he said to them, you 10 are the greatest since the times of the Shvatim. So because you are the greatest since the times of the Shvatim, you will take the place of the Shvatim. Now it happens to be those 10 people didn't live at the same time. Some were killed in the beginning, some were killed in the middle. Okay, whatever it is. But that's what happened. That's the Asar Rugei Malchus. All right. The problem is, how many Shvatim sold Yosef? Yosef obviously wasn't there, Binyamin wasn't there, and Reuven was already gone. Because Reuven said, send him into the pit, then he went back to his father, he went to do tshuva, whatever it was, he wasn't there at the time. So three people weren't there. So how many shvatim were there? 9. 12 minus 3, for those who are not in the know, is 9. So I don't get it. If there were 9 people, then why did 10 people die? So there's a famous answer. The famous answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is number 10. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzarev himself to the Maisa. He added himself on and said, I will be the 10th man for this minion. I'll make the minion for Klal Yisrael. I'll be involved in the sale of Yosef. He allowed himself to be brought in and to do that. Who's going to take God's place? Who's going to be God when it comes to this little thing? The answer is, why Rabbi Kiva? No! It's not the reason why. Gemara and Bava Kama, Daf Mem Aleph Amid Aleph. Gemara says, Nechemya Amzuni, some say Shimon Amzuni, darshened out all the S in the Torah. Every S, Bereshis Bar Elokim, S Hashemayim V'S Haaretz, what's the S? He created the sky and the land. Bereshis Bar Elokim, Hashemayim V'Haaretz. What do you mean the S? He darshened every S in the Torah. He said, this includes this and this includes that. And by the way, S is always an inclusion. Why is it an inclusion? Aleph through Tav. It includes every letter in the alphabet. So it's always an inclusion. So he said, so what's Shah? What do you do? So he got up to one pasuk. Es Hashem Elokecha Tira. You will fear Hashem your God, but there's an S. What else can you fear like God? You can't fear anybody but God. So Nechemya Amsuni, Hashem Amsuni said, forget it, I'm out. We can't darshan out these pasukim anymore. I'll throw away all the Essen that I darshan. The Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, what are you going to do with all the Essen that you darshan up until now? He said, Keshem shekibalti schar al adrisha, just like I got schar for darshaning them out and learning Torah, kakibalti schar al aprisha. I'm going to get schar for not darshaning them out anymore. Because if there's no S that you can fear, then I can't learn anything else. Ad shabar Rebbe Akiva, says the Gemara. So Rebbe Akiva came along and said, Es l'rabos talmidei chachamim. The S includes Talmidei Chachamim. You gotta fear Talmidei Chachamim like you fear God. That's just stop. You go up to a Talmid Chachamim and you say to him, oh, hey, how's everything going, Rabs? Or anything like that. You should fear him like you fear God. The same way you show a fear to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, show that fear to them. Rabbi Kiva said that. Said a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Akiva! Kach limadita. That's how you learn. I swear, says Hashem, that you're gonna take my place. If you're equating Talmidei Chachamim to me, you're going to take my place in the Asar Rugei Malchus. You're going to be me for the Asar Rugei Malchus. There were 9 people that died, and all 9 of them were for one of the Shvatim. But Rabbi Akiva represented HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Akiva was supposed to be the representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do we know that? The very end of the Parsha, in the Chukosah, it's the first Pasuk of Maftir that'll help you out. You got to have the Chumash open for you. Pasuk says, the whole mass of Bakar Vatzon, all the tithes of the cattle and the sheep, Kol Asher Yavor, everyone that passes Tachat HaShavet under the rod, they put out a rod, and all the cattle and the sheep would pass by. And the 10th animal, what would they do? Tachat HaShavet underneath the rod. Ho'atziri, the 10th one, yeah, Kodesh Lashem. It would be holy to God, that would be the Meiser, and they would smack it with a red stick, and they'd bring it out. Now the Asiri HaKodesh LaHashem. Listen to this pasuk. The Chol Ma'asar is an otriko. It's an abbreviation for the following words. The Yadu Kulam. Everyone knows. Lama Meis Akiva. Why did Akiva die? Shahaya Roe, that he was a shepherd. Again, I'm going to go through it again. Bechol Ma'asar. Biyadu Kulam Lama. Everyone knows why. Ma'asar. Meis Akiva. Shahaya Roe. Why Akiva died? Who was a shepherd of? What was he a shepherd of? Bakar Vatzon. That's Bechol Ma'asar Bakar Vatzon. Everyone knows where Akiva died, who was a shepherd of Bakar Vatzon, because Koasher Ya'avor, anybody who passed away from this world was Tachat HaShevet, was for one of the Shvatim. It was in representative of one of the nine Shvatim. But Asiri, the tenth one, Rabbi Akiva, Yakodesh LaHashem. He was holy for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was represented by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he was the one who took the place of God when it came to all these things. And that's the Pshat and the Pasuk. And that's the remez, the hint as to why Rabbi Akiva had to die. There's so many things to say about Rabbi Akiva. I'm not ready for it right now. We're not going to say them all right now. We're going to end with this. However, I will tell you, I may have a shiur on Shavuos all about this. The unfortunate part is, it might have to be at Skokie. But I'm going to, probably my shiur is going to be about this. I may do it second night also. We'll talk about it, but guys, we'll stop with this. Shkoyah.